Hello, and welcome back to another edition of Today's Lean Manufacturing. And our guest today is Karen Martin. Karen, you're in San Diego, and she's the author of the book, The Outstanding Organization. So welcome, Karen. Thanks for being a part of the show. And Karen, tell us, why did you write the book?
I've been working at this for over 20 years and helping organizations transform in all industries now, in all sizes, all parts of North America, actually. And I just keep finding the same common obstacles to success in organizations that keep them from being able to leverage the improvement methodologies and practices they're using and the transformational process. And so this book is all of that 20 plus years of experience and boiling things down to these four common things, behaviors that I find missing in many organizations that hold them back. And that is clarity, focus, discipline, and engagement. Very simple concepts, not necessarily as easy as one might think to accomplish those. But those are the four things that I find missing, and the book is about how to reinstill those into the DNA of an organization.
Who's the audience for your book? Who should be reading this book?
I think everyone should be reading this book.
Yes.
because I think the CEO and the C-suite group of leaders have to get a better understanding of what their organizational habits and behaviors are that are preventing them from achieving what they want their workforce to achieve. So, you know, the book definitely addresses the CEO perspective. And then for people who are either full-time or part-time leading improvement and, you know, the ones that are actually out there in the trenches, this gives them some very tactical tools to be able to take and accelerate what they're accomplishing and be more effective in what they're accomplishing. And then I think that there's a third group of the managers, middle managers that are a bit of the up-and-comers in organizations. Mm-hmm. That really need to understand how to better view work that's being done through a process improvement professional's perspective or lens. And so I think that middle management group would be a great audience for this book as well.
Where is the disconnect in management nowadays that you see?
Well, I think one reality that we're dealing with that's environmental is the fact that there's just so much coming at a business at any given time. And it takes a very measured, methodical approach to dealing with all that and figuring out what are the distractions that you should and could ignore from the true urgent fires. And I think a lot of leaders get a little confused between those two buckets of activities that are coming at them and need to develop better skills in discerning between true urgent, customer issues and things that are coming your way versus things that really are distractions and should be put on the back table until you accomplish your priority list that you're currently working from. So that's one disconnect.
Talk about clarity for us. That's like one of the first major points of your book. What do you mean by clarity, and how does an organization start to get that clarity?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's a really big topic. I actually was thinking about writing one book just on clarity. Clarity to me is the number one reason why organizations get kind of hung up and twisted up in what they're trying to accomplish. So it's clarity on multiple levels, from being very, very clear on what your customers really want, not what you think they want, but what they really want, so that it can lead you into better product development, better service delivery, and all of that. And then I think the next level down is getting very, very clear on what the business should be focusing on in any one fiscal year or quarter. You know, most of the time the executives have an idea. They may not agree on it. So that's the first thing they have to do is agree on it. But the next level down and two levels down and three levels down may not really have a clear understanding on what the executives are wanting to have accomplished. So that's a very big area of improvement I see. And then it goes all the way into how people talk, the terminology they use, and the variety of words that we have to mean the same thing, and acronyms. And so it's just becoming more disciplined on how we communicate so that their level of clarity in organization goes up a lot.
Yeah, and I want to touch on that too, because in your book you mentioned things like fuzzy words. Nice is not always being honest. So I want to get back to that, but just to recap just a little bit, the concept of chaos, is that what you mean by chaos then? Just this lack of clarity, or is it all four of these things? Or, and I can see how you do a book whole and just on that one topic, because you've covered a lot of material just in the first word there. But is the concept of chaos, I thought that was great, the way you said that's really the thing that's challenging in our organizations.
Yeah, it is. And so the way I view it is that organizations are trying to build these, you know, robust, transformed, high-performing organizations on a cracked foundation. And so what's causing the cracks is the chaos. And what causes, you know, we do root cause analysis, peel back the layers of the onion. Why? Well, the reason for the cracked foundation and the chaos that ensues from that is because organizations don't have as, you know, brilliant clarity as they could. They don't have the level of focus they need. They aren't operating in as disciplined a fashion as they need to, and they don't have widespread employee engagement to the levels they need. So by infusing clarity, focus, discipline, and engagement back into the DNA of the organization, they heal up those cracks and the chaos diminishes. It may not go away completely, but at least the chaos that's self-inflicted can pretty much go away.
All right, good. And I want to go on to the next one, focus, but one more thing on clarity, because what you said made so much sense to me. There sometimes, I think, is a level of clarity among the executives. We've experienced this. We've made a diligent effort to do some strategic planning, even having other people come to our business and help us with that effort. And so what we think we're all on the same page at one level, but as we, you know, ask different levels of the organization, there's a big disconnect. So what about focus? You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I would love to. And I think one of the things you just touched on is this disconnect between what the leaders think they want, or what they know that they want, and what they think the workforce understands in terms of what they want are two different things.
Yeah, that's it exactly. Yep.
Right. So one of the means that you can achieve that is also going to achieve focus, which is doing a modified version of what's called Hoshin-Kanri or strategy deployment. Mm-hmm. At least in the first couple of years, I think you have to kind of build your muscles up toward true strategy deployment and true Hoshin-Kanri, as it's called, as a strategic plan. But in the process of doing what I call, you know, Hoshin Light, what happens is the leadership team gets very clear and they reach consensus on what they feel are the top priorities of the organization. Then they have a conversation with the next level down to test out their hypothesis that these are, in fact, the most important things of the organization. And in testing that hypothesis, rather than, you know, kind of dictating what it is, they'll start understanding the degree to which the next level down is clear on what they mean by these objectives that they want to achieve and these priorities. So they can clear up the ambiguity that may exist at that senior level. Then, once they understand where they're at and they have consensus between those two levels, when that second level down takes that message to the next level down, and they do what it's called catch ball, like it's like tossing a ball back and forth, and they're taking it to the next level and saying, here's what we think are the top priorities. What do you think? And it's not a matter of just getting buy-in. It's really truly a conversation and getting feedback and tweaking the list based on what the next level down sees. Because remember, we're getting closer and closer to the customer now.
Right.
And in that conversation, again, the ambiguity will surface and you'll be able to clear up the misunderstanding between what one level is saying they want and what the next level feels they would need to do to execute that. And then, you know, you can take it down four or five levels if you want to, but maybe you only do two or three your first year. By the time you get through that, and it may take a couple months to get through that, everyone is completely clear, and leadership never has to be frustrated again that people aren't delivering and aren't executing to that plan. And the lower levels never have to be frustrated again with, I don't understand what they want.
And you had mentioned a couple of months. Do you see this happening in terms of weeks, months, years? Or is it, you know, organization by organization?
It really does depend on the size and the number of layers. So in your case, how many employees do you guys have?
Yeah, we're just at about 120.
Okay. So in your case, you actually could probably get through it in a month or a month and a half, because you want to allow some time for people to digest and think before they respond at each step along the way. Mm-hmm. And so if you start, is your fiscal year January or?
It actually is in October. It starts in October, yeah.
October 1. Yep. So you might want to start in the, like, if you were to do this next year, you might want to start in August, but I'd start right now. Even though you're already, you know, approaching your fiscal year, I'd start right now and try to get it in place for your October 1st cycle. And, you know, take the time you've got from now through October 1st and, you know, take it down maybe two levels, maybe not all three. And at least that'll be better than where you were last year, right?
Yeah, exactly. And this is why maybe we're overkilling, or at least for my selfish interest on this particular clarity issue, because we are just winding up on our fiscal year ending. And we have accomplished a lot in one sense. And then to still realize, wow, there's so much more we could be doing. So that's very interesting to me on this whole area. Yeah.
If I could add one more thing to that, I mean, I think that if you take a comparison between your fiscal year 2012 and fiscal year 2013, should you accept this mission of going down this clarity path, the other thing that should happen in that process of getting clarity is reducing the number of priorities so that you can complete all of them for sure and well done in the fiscal year that you're planning them to be done within. And build in some bandwidth to allow for that, you know, very unexpected, truly urgent thing that may come at you from the outside. Like suddenly a major supplier is in a geographic area where there's a, you know, environmental event that precludes them from being able to deliver, you know, or the election. I mean, the election may actually cause some chaos that we have to deal with, but it's out of, you know, it's out of our control.
Yeah. But it should be factored in. Great point. And I almost feel compelled to move on just because you need to come to our company. I think it'd be a great it'd be a great adventure together. But one area before we leave clarity, fuzzy words, things like phrases like I think, maybe, I've heard that, you know, cultural indicators and keywords. What did you have in mind there?
Yeah, that was a fun part of the book. So first of all, I'm a writer and I've been a writer for a long time. So I'm very word sensitive, but I also focus very much on the psychology of change and how people take up information and respond in the workplace. And so it was many, many years ago when I started noticing one client using the same word over and over and over, no matter what level in the organization I was working with, no matter what we were working on, they kept using the word swirling.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell us what that means. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And so I just all of a sudden I noticed the patterns. I'm a scientist, you know, by training back in my early career. So I'm kind of hardwired to look for patterns. Mm-hmm. And I saw this pattern and I thought, you know, not only do they all use this word, they actually do swirl. They literally swirl.
As in physically?
Well, no, they swirl in terms of how they're responding to customer needs, and they're swirling in terms of today's priority is on the bottom of the list tomorrow, and then, you know, a new one comes in and it's really a distraction.
Chaos.
And so then I started paying very close attention to all of my clients and all the organizations I was working with in workshop settings as well. And every single one of them had what I call a key word that I would hear over and over and over that to me was both a reflection of their culture and possibly actually changing their culture by using the word.
Yeah, and so I thought that was a great concept. So can you positively influence a culture or positively change a culture by introducing new keywords or phrases?
Absolutely. I mean, in a very local level, I do it every single week. I'm on site with the client by eliminating the word can't and eliminating the phrase no because and eliminating the, or not eliminating, but asking them and encouraging them to say, what if, why not, why, what if, why not, why, until they sound annoying. You know, because it just changing the kinds of words we use and switching from statements to questions, that shifts culture significantly from I'm definite, I know, we're going to put solutions in place, to one that does a more methodical and a better job at solving problems.
Yeah, I thought that was just so insightful. And I bet you could almost predict the outcome of an organization just by listening to those phrases and words. And so I thought that was fascinating. Let's move on. Clarity in the sense of key performance metrics. And as we talked briefly before the recorder started here, this was one of my favorite sections of the book. I think like you, I'm a little bit hardwired for analytics. And so talk to us about some of these key measurements that you described in terms of percent complete and accurate, process time, and lead time.
Clarity on metrics, I think, has, there's the macro and the micro. So we'll talk macro first. So one of the things I see in most organizations is they don't have good key performance indicators that are operational. And so they have finance indicators, but they don't have a lot of operational indicators. And if they do have them, they're typically lagging. So there's no ability to affect the work that's being done currently. You can only go back and improve the work so that in the future you get better with those metrics.
Right.
So I think that's the first area to macro. All organizations need to get far more operational and far more leading indicators into how they're looking at the operation. At a micro level, taking any process and breaking it into every single step along the way and looking at the transfer of information from one person to the next or from one work team to the next and looking at the quality of the information that's being transferred is hands down the most powerful tool I've learned, and my clients all are, you know, gaga about it whenever I first introduce them to it, because it reveals, again, back to clarity, it gives you clarity about the degree to which, again, self-inflicted chaos, we tie ourselves up by just not having clear information being passed from person to person. So in process mapping and process analysis and design, redesign activities, we're looking at the current state and asking every person that receives any kind of work from anywhere to evaluate what percentage of the time can they do that work without having to clarify it, without having to add missing information that should have been supplied, or with correcting it. So to me, all three of those are rework, not just correcting. And you know what, Brian? Much of the time, someone in the chain of events in a process will say 0% of the time, can I do my work and I receive work that's usable as is and I don't have to do rework.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It was. That's why I appreciated it so much. It seemed to be so enlightening. I reflect on simple things like, you know, order fulfillment or just receiving orders. And you could use a metric like that to measure that whole thing. Apart from EDI, there's a lot of rework in a lot of organizations just in the simple task of processing or entering an order, you know, not needing to get more clarity. And so we could go on and on. So I thought those metrics in under clarity were very, very powerful. How about focus?
So focus is really getting closer to discipline, but you have to have clarity in order to focus. So they do build on each other a bit. And focus is about determining what the priorities are and sticking with it. So back to that model, that Hoshin-like that I was referring to, and for people who are listening, I'm saying Hoshin, H-O-S-H-I-N. I just call it strategy deployment.
Okay.
Once you get that plan in place for the fiscal year, the challenge is sticking with it, right? So what you have to do is you have to put sustainable measures in place, so meeting on a very regular basis to go over that plan and to make sure people are sticking with the priorities and they haven't fallen prey to distraction, unnecessary distraction, is a key element in maintaining that focus. So that's getting, we're inching our way toward discipline, but having that standard process that you're always going back and you're reevaluating the priorities. And, you know, right now there's this really interesting thing happening in business literature where planning is getting a bit of a bad rap. And I don't believe that planning should be getting a bad rap at all. I think plans perhaps should be getting a bad rap, because if you stick to a plan in even when you have very compelling data that you should be shifting, that's as wrong as not sticking to a plan and just jerking the organization all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah. I think maybe you're right. And there's some literature, even maybe not so much in the business world, about meetings. And I wanted to, this is the section where you actually talk about meetings, staying focused at a meeting, no calls, no texting, no IMing, no emails. So I thought that was great because,
well, yeah, I even say in the book, I actually think we need to be having more meetings. And
yeah.
That makes people go crazy when I say that.
Yeah.
But it's like, no. You don't want to keep doing more of what you're doing. You want to have more effective meetings.
Yes. Yeah.
And I'm hardcore with the electronic devices. When I'm running a meeting, they are not on.
You check them at the, door.
Check them at the door. If they can't behave themselves, they do check them at the door.
Yeah. Let's talk about discipline. Take us there. Standardization, things like that. We skipped over, and clarity, I really appreciated the fact that you said, you know, visual management, some simple lean principles. Go and see. Go to the GIMA. Go look what's going on. So I don't want to jump around too much here, but take us through some discipline and what you had in mind there in your book.
Well, yeah, you're spot on. Some of those you know, kind of simple, again, management practices like going to the Gemba, going to where the work is being done on a regular basis to learn what's really going on instead of staying in an office and having very much, you know, back to clarity is about telling the truth, right? So having key performance indicators visually displayed in a work area so that everyone can see them, you can no longer hide from problems.
Right.
And that makes organizations uncomfortable, but it's so liberating. Because then when you get the problems out there, everyone can see it and you can rally around them and get problems solved far more quickly than if they're in a computer system or, you know, people are kind of covering up to hide from them and all that. So discipline is about getting standard practices in place that enable an organization to soar and to be high performing. And it goes from what we've already talked about, visuals and going to the Gemba, to problem solving. Mm-hmm. This, to me, is the, you know, for the next decade, if we did nothing but help business become more proficient in problem solving, we will have done the world of business so much good. Because it isn't an innate trait for most people. It can be learned with practice, with a coach, mm-hmm. but it's not as, you know, we think, oh, well, I solve problems every day. That may be true, but most people don't solve problems well every day.
Right. Right. And we talked briefly before the recorder went, and I know you spend some of your time in the healthcare initiative. One of the questions I've always had, is there a more of an aptitude for problem solving in those kinds of organizations? Do you see much difference between those and manufacturing organizations, or do we all just kind of not do it very well and we all need help?
Right there. Yes. I was going to say, sadly, I do not see a difference in healthcare. And sadly, I actually see healthcare being a bit behind other industries in terms of its understanding and sophistication around problem solving, actually quite a bit behind. There's a lot to be done in healthcare.
You know, and that kind of is very interesting to me because I always think of the healthcare industry as more of a scientific approach to work. Maybe that's just something I invented. I don't know, but... So whenever I have a guest that works within healthcare, I'm always curious about that. So,
I do mention this in the book. I mentioned the fact that physicians, if you look at the medical model and how diagnoses are created and how treatment plans are built based on diagnoses, it really does follow or should follow the PDSA cycle, plan, do, study, adjust,
right.
You know, also known as PDCA, plan, do, check, act. But what most physicians don't think that way. I mean, they're not trained in the scientific method the way for problem solving, the way that they should be. And so that's why you have so many hiccups in the whole diagnostic and treatment realm, is that, you know, the root cause analysis piece, and that's sadly missing in Western medicine. It's very much present in Eastern medicine.
Really?
But it's,
that's
interesting. Yeah.
That's very interesting. Maybe another episode we'll get into that, because that's intriguing to me. But go ahead.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I was going to say it may be another book too.
Yeah, there you go.
No, go ahead. Your questions are great.
Well, just kind of on the fourth one here then, you know, engagement. So we've talked about clarity and focus and discipline, engagement. What did you mean by that? The three C's, connecting and controlling and being creative. And one thing I'd really like you to touch on, because again, we're working through this as an organization, this whole process of onboarding.
You know, onboarding to me, if an organization had only one ability to, you know, work on one process, it should be onboarding. And most people will think I'm a little crazy when I say this. I actually think onboarding trumps customer delivery in terms of getting it really well wired. The reason why is that if you don't have a workforce that are highly engaged and high performing, you're not going to ever be able to deliver to a customer the way you'd like to. So it all starts with the employee. And what most organizations do is that an employee comes on board, day one, they walk through the door and they're charged up. They're raring to go. Remember where employees are coming from. You know, sometimes they've been laid off. Sometimes they've had an awful work experience and they just want out of there. So they come in very hopeful and they want to make this work. And then what we do is we get in the way over and over and over, and we start diminishing their excitement because they run into obstacle after obstacle, like they don't have all the logins they need to use the computer, or they may not even have a computer. They may not have a desk. I've had a client recently say to me they don't have business cards on day one, and the person is literally out in the field shadowing a salesperson on day one without business cards. And so I asked the question, well, why no business cards? Well, we don't want to do business cards until they actually show up, in case they don't show up. Well, what percentage of the time do they not show up? Oh, I don't know, 2%. Well, and how much do business cards cost these days? $45?
Yeah, right.
You know, come on. You know, incur the cost. It's a low risk. And give people the tools they need to be successful on day one. Easy.
Yeah, easy. That's it. And that's excellent. Well, let's kind of wrap up here. I thought your example of an outstanding organization in the Blue Angels rang home at a couple of places, because we're so close to where their home base is here in Pensacola. So talk to us a little bit about that. Just the things like, you know, never canceling a show due to maintenance problems. And then maybe a couple of questions of what's next for you.
Okay. So, yeah, isn't that the most amazing stat? They have never canceled an air show or demonstration, as they call them, due to maintenance issues.
Yeah.
They've only had a few canceled at all, and they were due to pilot issues. And so, I mean, if every organization could say that, wow, you know, we've never had to pull a product from a customer. We've never had to have a recall. We've never had to, I mean, there's just so many things that organizations do have their equivalent of maintenance issues. So one of the things I love about the Blue Angels organization is that they, to me, embody clarity, focus, discipline, and engagement. They are truly an outstanding organization. And there are outstanding businesses, but for the whole enchilada, to me, the Blue Angels are it. And one of the things that they do, for example, before every air show, they go in and they have this very concentrated, talk about focus, this very concentrated period of activity where they're focusing on nothing but that show. And they go into a room, it's completely sequestered, no one is allowed in, there are no distractions, and they go through in painstaking detail how they're going to do that show. And, you know, so some people will say to me, oh, but the Blue Angels, you know, that's high risk stuff. Of course they've got to focus. You know what? Every business has their version of high risk activities.
Right.
You know, maybe it's not physical risk and death, like, you know, the Blue Angels have that risk in hospitals, but it's risk of what your customers are going to think. It's risk of market share loss. Mm-hmm. It's risk of employee turnover. You know, so there is risk. And so they're very disciplined in that. And then they're even disciplined after every air show. This was something that I just was fascinated with. Talk about reflection, or hansei, as we refer to it in Lean. After every single performance, they go into a room, and for up to 2 hours, they're drenched in sweat, and they're sitting there going over a video frame by frame by frame, looking at what worked well, and more importantly, what didn't work well. And then they do real-time root cause analysis and real-time countermeasure design and implementation for the next show. Just imagine if businesses did even a tenth
of that. Yeah, even
part
of that, yes.
Yeah, how effective we'd be, because we're, you know, I like to use a phrase I heard on a video once. When you do real-time root cause analysis, you're able to get to the root while the trail's still hot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a murder investigation. You
yeah.
know? You know, they always say you want to figure it out before the body gets
cold. Before the leads go cold, right?
Yeah, yeah. So it's the same thing in business. And yet we just charge ahead, next fire, next fire, next fire, next fire. And we never stop and have that discipline in order to get that. So I love the Blue Angels. I think they really embody, and they really are an outstanding organization.
Yeah, and I thought the way you brought it out was a great, great example. And again, it had local impact for us here down in the Gulf Coast. So kind of in conclusion then, what's next for you?
Good question. I think I'm going to be doing a book on value stream mapping.
There you
go. So I'm in discussions on that right now, and value stream mapping for non-manufacturing processes. And then the next hardcover book, kind of a big book as I call them, is Crystallizing in My Mind. And it may have to do with a deeper dive into clarity.
Okay. So you've got two or three books brewing already.
Oh, yeah. There's more than that in my head.
Right. That's great. Well, this has been a great time together, Karen. Thanks so much for being on today's Lean Manufacturing Podcast. How can people get a hold of you? I'll include your links to your website and email, the information I have, but tell our listeners how they can get a hold of you.
Sure. I think the best thing is my website, which is ksmartin.com, ksmartin.com, or if you forget that, KarenMartin.com also points to that. And then on it, I have book pages, and there's lots of options for whether you want to buy from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, 800 CEO Read, or whatnot. And that has all my contact information as well. I also have a blog. I'm just kind of entering the blogosphere. So if people want to subscribe to the blog and or my monthly newsletter, that's available from my homepage as well.
Well, great. And it has been a delight to have you on the show. Thanks so much for being our guest today.
Thank you, Brian, for having me. This is really fun. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.